Hawaii.
It's time for some straight talk. The big wireless companies charge a boatload for their superior network coverage. But guess what? Straight Talk uses the same cell towers, but you pay half the cost. Who knew? Well, now you do. And I do. So let's do something. It's time to switch to Straight Talk. Unlimited plans start at just $45 a month on America's largest, most dependable networks. Straight Talk Wireless, only at Walmart.
Savings may vary. Please refer always to the latest terms and conditions of service at straighttalk.com.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Cloudy skies and not as windy as yesterday. And the temperature's around 25 degrees, but the real feel is about 20 with this west wind. But warmer changes are coming our way. It's cloudy tonight, low to about 22 at the Sound Shore. Now, tomorrow is a cloudy day, not as cold, high about 39. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490. WGCH.
Around the House with Steve Gladstone on Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 is jam-packed with important information, preventative maintenance, and all sorts of home tips to keep your house in great shape and your family safe. We have special guests on heating, cooling, environmental issues, and we make it fun with trivia contests and prizes. Don't let that home fall apart around you. Join us Saturday mornings from 8 to 10 on Around the House with Steve Gladstone on 1490 WGCH.
The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio. And now, the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on 1490 WGCH.
Good afternoon, Greenwich. This is Beth O'Malley, and you are listening to Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere. Thank you for joining me today. Peter, I am so pleased to have you here today. We met a few weeks back over, I guess it was lunch at the Cos Cabo, right?
Yeah.
And I appreciate your bringing in Mr. Chad Silver as well. Today we're going to start with two of our guests who are here just to do an introduction and to discuss a little bit what's happening next weekend, which we're so excited about in terms of safe rides and fundraising to keep safe rides going. And then I have invited Christine I am not saying your name right. How do I say it?
D'Alessandra.
And she is from Sacred Heart Academy here locally. And we'll be discussing today mindfulness, mindful parenting. And I really think you'll have a lot to learn from Christine in terms of parenting in a way using positive discipline versus some of the more traditional old-fashioned techniques that maybe our grandparents were using. And then I also want to mention a few things. Today is a little bit different. We are streaming live, so this is the first time I've had the camera pointed on me, and I'm not sure which of these cameras is actually taping. Okay, that one. Hi, guys. So I also want to say Happy New Year. This is my first time back to the studio live since, I guess it was mid-December. And I have a few announcements for my own practice in Old Greenwich. I am having a second office opening up the hall for me, and then we'll be moving to downtown Greenwich as well within the next year. And Nicholas O'Brien is joining me. He is a nurse practitioner that I've worked very closely with during the last year in terms of his doing a psychiatric nurse practitioner work, which is basically prescription and medication for clients who need services in addition to psychotherapy. So we're very excited about that, and Nicholas will be joining me here on the show in a few weeks as well. So let's start off with Mr. Peter Negrea and Chad Silva. What I'd like to do is just mention that you both were here at Greenwich High School formerly, and Chad, you are now at
Hobart William Smith Colleges. I'm a sophomore right now, graduating in 2019.
Okay. And so you were you did a little bit of work with Safe Rides before leaving. Peter is actually our past president of Safe Rides, and you were here at the high school, so you know a lot of the kids know you from your work there. Can you tell us a little bit, Peter, why we're here today and what's happening next weekend?
That's right, Beth. So I was the former president of Safe Rides. The current president is working hard these days to make sure the event is going to be a huge success. So we're working together to make sure that we can get the funds we need to make sure it runs throughout the rest of the year. So we have roughly a $30,000 fundraising gap that we're trying to fill. So when I came back from college and I heard about this, I mean, I had to get involved. So I started working with the current president and James Boutel, the executive director of TAG, and we put this fundraiser together pretty quickly. So Mr. Tessie will be there, Chief Heavey, Fred Camillo may make it, and Beth Barheit. So it's this Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. at 49 Byfield Lane.
And I'm really excited that you're also going to have my friend, my dear friend, Olga Litvienko there, who is Miss Connecticut, our new Miss Connecticut, who represented Greenwich in the Miss Connecticut pageant. So she'll be attending as well. And you've spoken with her, and that's all set up?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Olga seems just like the sweetest person ever. So, I mean, it's going to be a great event. We're going to have food as well from the Costcomber, from Garden Catering, from Adelise. We're going to have wine from Vow's Liquor, beer from Star Distributors. It's really nice to see every part of the community coming together and building such a great event.
It's really neat. Now, what's the goal here? How much money do you need to keep Safe Rides going? Because I know that the future right now of Safe Rides is really uncertain. For the next year, you don't have funding to have it go through smoothly, and that's the reason that you're having everyone together this coming weekend.
Yeah, so our goal is to raise $30,000. We hope to make that goal. We seem to be making some progress. We're hoping the event will bring in the rest. So the biggest goal, as well as the $30,000 for this fundraiser, is to ensure that the BET budget committee is able to fund $18,000 grant every year. The benefit of this would be is that, say, for example, next year, if I am not able to do this, it shouldn't be that the program is dependent on my free time. So by having the town be a stable source of funding for this program, it really ensures it for the next generation.
Wonderful. And I know we're very appreciative of Chad Silver and the company that you work for. You're working as well as a college student.
Yes.
And can you tell us a little bit about what your donation as part of this program?
So basically, Peter came to me a couple of weeks ago when this event wasn't put together, and he said, listen, I need your help making this event happen. Originally, we were going to have it at a different locale. But I said, I have a beautiful property we could use in Backcountry Grange. It's owned under Silver Properties, which is my dad's company, which I work with him. Mm-hmm. And I've ran events before with TAG, actually, with my good friend Jen Danzy. And I said, Peter, look, we can have this event at this Backcountry estate. And we basically put everything together through that. And I think it was a beautiful process because we got to see the town of Grange really come together and show off that as a community we can come together and make this like wonderful program happen.
So let me ask you this. If I attend the event and fall madly in love with the house, is it available for purchase?
Yes, it is, actually, through Sotheby's.
Wonderful.
Who will also be at the event.
Okay. It might be a little outside of my bracket, but okay. Tell me a little bit about how Safe Rides. I really want for our listeners, you know, as a parent of a high schooler, I know how it works. But a lot of folks really don't know exactly what Safe Rides is. And my understanding is your Friday and Saturday nights?
Yeah. So Safe Rides runs every Friday and Saturday night during the school year from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. We extended a few hours for special nights such as prom, junior prom, Halloween night. Then we usually run to either 2 or 3 in the morning. Safe Rides offers free, anonymous rides to teenagers who can't find another way home. So this could be either A, they've had too much to drink, B, maybe their friend had something to drink and they were their ride home. It could also be even that you know, the roads aren't safe anymore and they want someone, you know, a little bit more professional that will be able to take them home.
Safe Rides is run with professional paid drivers through TAG, through insurance reasons. And
so it's not students driving?
No, it's not students driving. We have adult drivers for insurance purposes. When you think about it, that's not unreasonable when you consider it's late at night on back roads with drunk teenagers in the back. You want someone who knows what they're doing behind the wheel.
I was wondering how that worked out because I always had it in my mind that it was students. In the past, historically, did you have students driving?
I heard that the Red Cross did have some students driving, but I don't believe they were also always using Red Cross vehicles. Modern day, the insurance companies have proclaimed that if you're going to use the cars that they've insured, they want the drivers that they know what they're doing. Which we find is reasonable. So we do also have a huge teen involvement with the program. We have teenagers answering the phones and also in every vehicle. So when a student calls Safe Rides and says, "Help, I need a ride," the teen volunteer will take down their information, take down where they are, what their home address is. We don't take them to anywhere else. We pick them up. We have a teen in the car so they can make conversation. Also check their well-being to make sure that they're all right. If they're not all right, we have a way to check that, which is something Uber would never do, by the way.
Right.
So it's a very safe measure to take to have a second teen in the car. And we have teens from Brunswick, Sacred Heart, Greenwich Academy, of course, Greenwich High School. And everyone comes together, all the teens come together because they see the value of this program.
Oh, absolutely. Now, what if you pick up a child who's intoxicated? Mm-hmm. What's the protocol for that?
Well, essentially, we basically, ever so subtly, we may make an observation. Does this kid need help or not? Most of the times, actually, so far, we haven't had an incident that we look at a student and we've been concerned. Most kids, they've had a few drinks. They need to go home and they need to sleep it off. So we get them home safely. We haven't had this happen yet, but we do know what to do if it does. If a student looks like they may be in some serious danger, both the drivers and the students know that their first goal is safety, so they will call an ambulance who will arrive to the destination of where the car is, and then the medics will make a decision whether or not the person needs medical attention.
Okay, terrific. You distinctly said it when you started this discussion that you're different from Uber in that way. Do you know what happens if Uber shows up and someone's really out of it?
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why Uber really isn't a solution in a lot of these cases. First of all, if a Uber driver shows up, they may not like the idea of picking up a drunk teen in the back of their car, so they may drive away. Say they pick them up, then the Uber driver doesn't exactly have the training or really the background check to say, all right, this kid isn't capable of making their own decisions. This kid needs medical attention despite anything they may say. They don't have the training for that or the interest. So Safe Rides in that way is much better than Uber. In addition, a lot of young women have a decent concern about taking Ubers, so we respect that by offering a solution with a teen in the car so they understand that it's a much safer and more secure way to get home.
I agree. There have been some instances where even young men have been propositioned by drivers that I've read about in the paper. So I think for both males and females, it's a much safer way to go. Now, we didn't have this discussion before we came on air, but what I want to tell you is, unbeknownst to you, I had a client just two weekends ago who got into an Uber intoxicated. And, I don't know what other substances were used, but basically the child was dropped off at the parent's home unconscious by an Uber driver. And that's really not okay. From a safety standpoint, you really want measures in place to keep a child safe. So I love the idea of that you would take appropriate measure to keep a child safe. And the child was then taken over to the hospital by ambulance from the home. But that ride, who knows? I don't know if it was 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a half an hour. That was a very unsafe situation.
Yeah, honestly, that's the exact situation that Safe Rides aims to avoid. Listen, I don't mean to preach here, but my grade's been pretty unlucky. We've already lost three people, two to tragic suicides, one to a boating accidents. So we're really trying to avoid that exact type of situation. What happens if something, you know, what happens if the ambulance had arrived half an hour later? What if nobody had come to that child and that child died from alcohol poisoning?
Right.
So it's – sorry about that. It's exactly this why we run safe rides. This isn't about, you know, making – this isn't a party hopping service. This is about making sure our friends get home safe.
It's an incredible service, and the fact that you all pull together. I also, you know, I was talking to my kids about it this morning and telling them you were coming on the air, and I said, you know, when you get to high school, this could be a really cool place to hang out because, you know, you're not into the party scene. So maybe on a Friday or Saturday night, going over, answering the phones, eating pizza, hanging out with a bunch of kids who really don't want to get wasted on the weekend.
Let me tell you something. That place, honestly, it can be pretty fun there. So we have – so you get a little action sometimes with the calls. But then in the downtime moments, it ends up being a bunch of your close friends, your team. You're watching The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, or you're playing Cards Against Humanity, or you're chatting about drama in school. And it's a good place to hang out in a safe environment and also volunteer for the community. So it's a great volunteer.
So do you get hours, volunteer hours?
You do get volunteer hours if you volunteer for the program. And there are people from all over. So it's a chance to meet new people as well. Who feel awesome. Just as passionate about the
So you're when you're hanging out answering the phones, you're now at the tag house. You're no longer at the police department?
Yes. So the history of Safe Rides is a bit of a long one. In 1982, Safe Rides was started by the Red Cross, who wanted to combat the problem of drinking and driving among teens in the town. And they operated the program to around 2013, 2014, when they shut down the program to focus on more disaster relief. So the town of Greenwich actually picked up the program for about a year through the First Selectmen's Youth Commission, who paired with the town police to drive town vehicles with off-duty police officers. For a number of reasons, obviously, that's not something you can sustain. The liability was pretty scary to think about. So the First Selectmen's Youth Commission passed it off to TAG, who created Safe Rides as its own entity. So it's paired with TAG. It's all under TAG's insurance and 501c3. But it really has its own dependence now.
Oh, terrific. All right, good. Well, I can't thank you guys enough for coming on the show. On Saturday the 14th from 6 to 8 p.m. at 49 Byfield Lane in Backcountry Greenwich.
Yes.
Julia Mock is our current president for Safe Rides, and she's right at the high school, right? She's a senior?
Yep.
Okay. And you'll both be there.
Yes, we will.
And then we have tons of folks from the town, as you said. How much are tickets?
So we ask that the attendance contribution is $250. We really hope to see you guys there.
Awesome. All right. So I'm looking forward to Saturday night. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having us. Thanks, Beth.
Absolutely. So this is Beth O'Malley, and you are listening to Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour at 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Cloudy skies and not as windy as yesterday. And the temperature's around 25 degrees, but the real feel is about 20 with this west wind. But warmer changes are coming our way. It's cloudy tonight, low to about 22 at the Sound Shore. Now tomorrow's a cloudy day, not as cold, high about 39. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
This is Alice Bonvenuto at Greenwich Library. The Peterson Concert Series is proud to present the world-class early music ensemble, Earhart, on Sunday, January 15th at 3:30 in the Cole Auditorium of the Greenwich Library. Earhart was formed to feature, in a completely new context, the lute, the most popular instrument of the Renaissance. The Earhart Quartet offers a program titled, Will You Walk the Woods So Wild? With Renaissance music from the British Isles. The music of John Dowland, William Byrd, and John Johnson are featured, as well as old ballad tunes from England, Scotland, and Wales. Mark January 15th, 3:30 in the Cole on your brand new 2017 calendars, because you don't want to miss this captivating performance by Earhart. I'm Alice Bonvenuto of Greenwich Library and 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com, anywhere.
Hi, welcome back. This is Beth O'Malley. I'm a psychotherapist in Old Greenwich, and you are listening to Be Well with Beth on the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour on 1490 WGCH or WGCH.com from anywhere. Thank you for joining me today. So we just were meeting with two wonderful young men, Peter Negrea and Chad Silver, and they are at Fordham and Hobart, respectfully. But former Greenwich High School students who were involved with Safe Rides and are now doing this wonderful fundraiser. For those of you who were listening to me speculate that I might want to buy the mansion that they're having the estate, party in backcountry on Saturday the 14th from 6 to 8. So I asked them how much the house would cost.
You mean that's not where we're doing the show from in the future? I thought
no.
That was our new studio.
Apparently, I can't afford it because
you and me both.
A little bit outside of my price range at around $10 million or something crazy. All right. So we are here today with Christine, and I am going to talk a little bit before you start about who you are and what you bring to our community. We are so blessed to have you working here in Greenwich at Sacred Heart for the last 3 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you are not yet a Connecticut resident,
no.
But you're in Brewster, but that's okay.
Hey,
we'll forgive you.
Leave us New Yorkers alone.
Oh, I forgot.
New Yorkers, Empire Staters, unite.
Truth be known, I'm from, you know, the Upper East Side
yes.
of Manhattan. So. Christine is the head of the lower school at Sacred Heart Greenwich, which is an all-girls independent Catholic preparatory school for kindergarten through 12th grade.
Preschool.
Oh, preschool.
Yes.
Okay. And Sacred Heart also has a co-ed early childhood program called the Barat Center for Early Childhood Education. You are the administrator for both the Barat Center and the lower school with the responsibility for Sacred Heart's youngest learners,
mm-hmm.
Basically from age 3 to through 4th grade.
Mm-hmm.
You joined Sacred Heart in the year 2014, coming from the Keystone School in San Antonio, Texas, where you were the head of the lower school for 7 years. And prior to that, you were in Vermont, in Manchester,
yes. mm-hmm.
and that's where you founded the Maple Street School,
yes.
which is so incredible. It's a also an independent school.
Mm-hmm. Co-ed.
Co-ed independent mm-hmm. school, and you taught elementary prior to that, correct?
Yes, all grades through 8th grade.
Great. Mm-hmm. I was sharing with you prior to the show that I grew up in a household with educators, and my dad started teaching kindergarten and move through first, second grade, and then into running a substance abuse program in the middle schools of Brooklyn. And so education is something that's really very important to me in my life and in working with my kids. And, I think the listeners know that from all of the shows that I've done that are so educationally geared. One of the pieces that I really found interesting in terms of your education is that your undergraduate degree from Linden State College, which is one of the Vermont state colleges, is in psychology,
mm-hmm.
but with a concentration in elementary education and special ed,
mm-hmm.
which is fabulous. And then you went on for your master's degree, of course, in administration and supervision from Antioch University in New Hampshire. And with regard to having you here today, I'm really looking for folks to get a sprinkling of what you'll be talking about tomorrow at your presentation. So tell us, let's just start with what is tomorrow?
So I'm first of all, thank you. I'm really excited to be here, Beth. This is exciting and fun for me to share all the things that we're doing and that I'll be doing tomorrow. I will be at the Rye Public Library at 6:30, from 6:30 to 8, and I'll be doing a presentation on basically called The Young Learner, but it's about development, meeting transitional needs, and most importantly, which I think is on the forefront of most parents' minds, is discipline and behavior and socialization. Those are the seems to be the things that come across my desk in my office often. How do I do this? What happens when? And I want my child to have friends. And so I'll be talking a lot about mindful discipline.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
The presentation is for parents only,
mm-hmm.
correct? And it's free to all parents?
Yes, it's open. It's free. We won't have childcare available, but I'm hoping on a lot of parents of young children be able to come and hear what I have to say about development of children and to walk away with some tips and some resources.
All right. So when we talk about mindful discipline, we're looking more at positive discipline. Is that, are you looking at reward-based discipline?
No. So first of all, you mean, you thank you very much for that beautiful introduction of my whole background. But most of the time, whenever I give advice, it's wearing my experience in psychology, an educator for over 25 years, and also as a mom. And it's been, I've had a lot of all of that bundled into one. And, you know, mindful discipline, there's a lot of research out now on mindful discipline. There are a lot of resources, a lot of books. But what we're finding and the things that parents ask me about is they, everyone wants kind of like a strategic kind of quick list of things they can do with children. And really, mindful discipline is a lot of work. It's like those New Year's resolutions, right? So it's like, I want to be this size, or I want to look this, or I'm going to be healthy. Mindful discipline takes a lot of work because the first step is really being more mindful as you as a parent. And I find that children really don't have behavior problems. It's really about the environment and the consistency of the lack of discipline or structure consistency they've received that their behavior is demonstrating. And that, you know, the most important thing is, I'll speak a lot about this tomorrow night, is that young children need basic things that we've always known about children: consistency, structure, routine. And I find that, you know, parenting lately, I've been in education since 1988. It's very long, so we can all tab that those years. But I find that parenting has changed greatly to becoming this grand analytical process, and that the most important things, the baby basically has been thrown out with the bathwater. And children, you know, a lot of parents come, and there are a lot of choices children have now. A lot of children are being faced, like, the way in which parents even communicate children is, honey, would you like to put your coat on now? Sweetie, can you do this? Children, the thing they strive for and need the most to create security, empowerment, and confidence is that you are the parent. You are in charge. They don't need to be asked a choice of whether they want to put their coat on. You have to basically say, you need to put your coat on. You can explain the reasons for it. Sweetie, it's cold. We have to put our coat on, and we need to leave. And you need to do it now. And so I think a lot of the way in which we, well, I have older children now, my youngest being 17, but I'm also a parent. The way in which we as parents talk to our children really lay the foundation for those behavioral, social kind of disciplinary issues that they see later on, or they don't understand why their child won't get in the car, or why they throw a tantrum in the grocery store, why they cry endlessly about not getting what they want or not going to bed. And really, the parents really need to take a look at how they're interacting, their own awareness of who they are. Mm-hmm. And once they start that, then they can move into the types of strategies that they can use with children. But I really feel like the hard work has to be where being bringing awareness to themselves first and why they choose to do that.
You know, I love how you worded that, because being directive in giving children guidance on what the next step is crucial. And one of, I think I took for granted that I did that with my kids.
Right.
And then,
a lot has changed.
Yeah. And then When I have families that come in with their little ones and they're sitting on the sofa in my office and we're starting to discuss some of the behavioral issues, and if the child gets rambunctious, maybe, you know, flipping upside down on the couch or just moving around in a way that's not productive for our conversation, and the child's really looking at avoidance of what we're talking about, the parents will often chime in with, wouldn't you like to sit in and talk to Miss Beth?
Right.
No, they don't want to sit and talk to me.
Right.
So I will really demonstrate for the parent, you know, appropriate parenting and say, I need you to sit down now because we're discussing this.
Right.
And really use a much more firm approach.
Right. I think parents with this whole concentration, of course, I'm grateful as an educator. There's been a lot of research done on brain development, human development, a lot in the last 30 years. Unfortunately, what happens is then people have a lot of information and they just, you know, Parent Magazine just hits highlights. It's almost like a Cosmopolitan, you know, Cosmo for parent, for psychology and human development. And I think they view every situation as a mature growth. They don't understand that children are concrete, impulsive creatures, and that the less structure, the more decisions they have, that creates within themselves insecurities. They don't have the cognitive abilities yet to make judgments with based on comparison, comparing experiences. They have no experience. They're three. Their experience is, I'm hungry and I want to eat, and it's your job to tell them when they can eat and what they can eat. So I think they want to make every situation into a moment of growth. My advice I try to give when they come in and out of my doors as an administrator of preschool through fourth grade is that there are moments for that, but that each it's based on the age of the child. So a conversation you have with a five-year-old is very different than a nine-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And also that you have to be very aware of that, but that you are always in charge. And whether a child can reason or not reason, it doesn't take away from the fact that you're still the captain of the ship at your house, and you get to decide. And you don't always have to have every moment about whether or not they should sit on the chair as a moment of growth. Those moments are things you choose to sit down and talk to your child when they're in a very healthy, happy, receiving mood. And let's not forget a young child's attention span. I mean, if you get 3 to 5 minutes for a 3 to 4 year old, you're lucky.
Right.
So they're not really being able to focus on most of what you're saying. They just need you to tell them to sit down and state the consequence. I think that's what you were saying. You were modeling for that mother. Parents often forget the logical consequence and then to follow through with that. None of us want to leave in the grocery store when our cart is full and the child's screaming for the candy or whatever else that they want. I want a balloon. I need a balloon. But the thing is that moment you actually fall through that and leave those groceries there and have maybe pancakes or cereal for dinner is going to have more of an impact on your sense of authority with your children than if you just gave in to the candy. The giving in part leaves a larger mark than parents think.
Well, yeah, it sabotages the parent's ability to parent. You spoke about three key pieces: consistency, structure, and routine.
Mm-hmm.
And structure is what children really crave.
They need it.
They really do.
They really do. And I think we don't, you know, Marie Montessori, I'm a developmentalist. So everything I do at Sacred Heart, every decision from how we, our curriculum to how the teachers instruct, is all about really understanding where children are in their development. Children, there's a big difference even between 7 and 8 years of age or 8 and 10 years of age. And what they can absorb and how they interact with the world is very specific. And there's a lot going on in, because we actually have 2.5-year-olds. We accept 2.5-year-olds at Sacred Heart, and it's called Barra because it's a French name. I used to get all mixed up. I actually called it Barrette or Bear for the first year. But in our Barra Center, which is our 2.5-year-old to 5-year-olds, there's a big span of stuff that they can absorb. A 5-year-old's very different from a 3-year-old, and so you know, we have to be very specific. So Marie Montessori, what I loved, what she brought to the world of psychology, was that she finally said, children learn different than adults. They communicate different than adults. It used to be that children were instructed as mini adults. So sit there in the little chair and you're going to have your little bow tie. And even if you look in art, you know, children were portrayed as little miniature adults.
Yeah.
And so she changed the whole world of education by saying they learn differently. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's a parent's responsibility to understand that about their child, maintaining our authority, but understanding that children need that structure at different ages in different ways because it creates safety, which creates
exactly.
them to feel confident.
Yes.
Confidence comes from feeling safe, right?
Yes. Yes, exactly. It's that safety in the routine and knowing what to expect next and what to expect after that. And that's really where children can then blossom into their own personality because they're feeling good.
Right. And so a good institution or community that honors transitional needs of children is a place you want to be. And because they know that those expectations are really important for children, for them to have safety, feel empowered, and be able to take risks, and know that even if they're impulsive or react, that there are always consistent ways in which the adults around them deal with it.
Yes.
And that's another important thing. Definitely, I mean, I'm not here to give advice on relationships, but when you are two people in a household raising a child, a lot of advice I give is that they have to be on the same page about how they're going to be disciplining them.
Yes, I agree. And sometimes that even requires going into another room to discuss so you can come out.
Walk-in closets are great places to have conversations.
So there's a united front there. All right, good. Thank you so much, Christine. I will be, we're going to take a break and come right back, and we will be continuing to discuss mindful parenting. This is Beth O'Malley with the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour at 1490 AM WGCH and WGCH.com.
From the WGCH Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans with your Doppler weather radar forecast. WGCH brings you up-to-the-minute weather 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Cloudy skies and not as windy as yesterday. And the temperature's around 25 degrees, but the real feel is about 20 with this west wind. But warmer changes are coming our way. It's cloudy tonight, low to about 22 at the Sound Shore. Now, tomorrow is a cloudy day, not as cold, high about 39. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Evans for 1490 WGCH.
Hi, I'm Tony Savino. Join me each Thursday morning at 9 o'clock on 1490 WGCH for Spotlight on Medicine. Each week we speak with the doctors, nurses, and other medical experts at Greenwich Hospital. This week on Spotlight, is weight loss surgery right for you? And my guest is Greenwich Hospital bariatric surgeon Dr. Ashutosh Kaul. That's Spotlight on Medicine, Thursday mornings at 9, right here on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
Hi, this is Beth O'Malley at the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour at 1490 AM or WGCH.com from anywhere. And we are actually streaming live, I believe, today.
We're on Facebook Live today, Beth.
Facebook Live. Where would our listeners find that?
It's on the Greenwich Sentinel page right now. I believe I shared it on my own page as well for those who follow me. But we're there. It looks great. Craig Jones is to my right directing away.
Wonderful.
We're just
you,
kind
Craig.
Of experimenting. So it's good. Really cool. It's something we did last Friday, and it looks good. And now we just got to see if we're going to continue it. So
it's good I didn't wear my pajamas today.
I'm very happy. Yeah. When I saw you today, I said, oh, she is TV appropriate.
All right. Well, we are here today with Christine. And you tell me again.
D'Alessandro.
D'Alessandro.
Thank you.
Beautiful Italian
yes,
name?
Italian.
Yes. And I should know that because my maiden name is Blangiardo. But I'm a little rusty on my Italian these days. And Christine is the head of the lower school at Sacred Heart Greenwich, and we are thrilled to have her here today. Tomorrow, Christine will be presenting to the public at the Rye Public Library from 6:30 till 8 p.m., and that is a free workshop available to parents. And we're really targeting preschool through the elementary years, so about fourth grade or so,
correct?
In terms of mindful parenting. and development and early developmental stages for young children. And Christine's expertise is really in early childhood development. Mm-hmm. Where we left off a few moments ago, we were talking a bit about structure, consistency, and routine, and the importance of that in the lives of young children and also in the lives of families, and how parents really will benefit from coming across as a united front to the children and bringing in the caretaker into that too, because oftentimes our families will have a babysitter or a nanny or a grandparent or an aunt who's in the home who's helping to assist, and you really want everyone on the same page. I'll tell you, one of the most interesting families I worked with really understood the importance of that consistent message to the child from not just the parents, but from the live-in nanny. Mm-hmm. And so in the treatment and doing family therapy with them around behavioral issues with their elementary school child, they introduced to the therapeutic process the nanny.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, it was invaluable for me to work with not just the parents who were at work till late at night, but to also be able to work with the nanny and to pull out from that and to help facilitate healthy communication between the parents and the nanny in terms of parenting the children.
Right.
So that was just and I wish that was done more often. I don't think people think to do that. And, you know, there are egos at stake here, of course. You know, I had care with my children as a working single mom. That really was crucial to raising my kids, was having a wonderful woman at the home with them when I had to be at the office. And her and I being on the same page and not allowing the children to play, you know, to play us.
Right. Well, that's totally in line with the structure and consistency. They can smell it out. As soon as there's a change, they're looking for, where are the rules? Where's the consistency? And any little crack or hole in that, at first, you know, I'm sure there's a part of them that wants to have some excitement and change, but they aren't really capable of dealing with it. And they really don't want it. So yes, I love that. I mean, I would encourage that more with our parents, you know, because we have lots of people who have nannies, and often the children have a different relationship with each member of their family.
Right, exactly. And then I'm just thinking, you know, in homes where both parents are living together, it's a little bit easier to communicate, but we have so many families where parents are in separate households these days.
And blending and traveling and all kinds of things. And so, you know, I recently had a mother who was preparing for another child, a sibling, and I love to do talks on how to foster really strong sibling relationships. And the thing she asked about, the first thing she says, how can I prepare my child? And I said, it's not about preparing your child. I said, you and your husband have to prepare, because when that new baby comes, it's a huge transition. And the first impulse is to remove the first child, because their parents want to think that they want to have that special time with the new child. But in fact, they all need to be together. So the dynamic of the growth needs to happen. And, you know, it doesn't have to be both parents disciplining. You know, I remember when you started off introducing myself earlier on, you said the old fashioned ways. You know, years ago, one person was in charge, right? And usually it was the mother. And the father, no matter what you tried to do when he came home, mom did this, mom did that, whatever your mother said. And I know that sounds kind of old fashioned, but really what that dad was doing was giving the full authority to mom. And it's really, children know who's in charge and who isn't. The parents will come to you and say, I don't understand, my daughter behaves so well for you in school. We are so structured at school, so structured, and they know who's in charge. When I walk in a room, the head, which is the principal of the elementary, and the kids come in and they hang out with me. It's a very nurturing environment. Along with that alignment, with that nurturing, comes that they know I'm in charge. And they understand that. It doesn't really take much. It really just takes being really direct with them and setting out your expectations and following through with it. And, you know, there's a lot nowadays that people are afraid to address. It's almost like we don't want our children to feel unpleasant. I do parent coffees once a month with parent on parenting, and I often ask the parents, what are you afraid of, when we talked about discipline? And they said, well, you know, we don't want to upset our children. We don't want them to feel bad. We want to catch it before it happens. We don't want them to fall. We don't want them to feel negativity. And really, growth is an uncomfortable process. In order to challenge a child cognitively, it's uncomfortable. You're learning something that's not, you're not comfortable with. You haven't mastered it. And emotional and social development is the same. It actually takes longer and more consistency. It's harder. And I feel really strongly that it's not about pleasing children. It's especially the little things that they do. You have to be on them all the time. The rudeness, the when they walk in, mom, they throw the bag at the mother. I mean, all these things have to be addressed.
Right.
You can't let them just throw the bag at you. Excuse me? You threw that bag at me? Yeah. You know, you have to address it. Just like with any, you know, they're pack kind of creatures. You know, any
right.
kind of... You know, when they're young like this, it's not about reasoning. It's about creating a structured environment for expectations and values, and you have to reinforce it always. Now, you can have tired days. I'm a mom of three. I've had days where I come home, I'm exhausted. But one of my outs was that I would say to my children, give me 20 minutes, and I would just go have my time to decompress, and then I would take my breath, and then I would be able to go back out after working a full day. And also saying, I'm tired tonight. I really don't feel like talking about that. Or just do this for now. We'll talk about it some more. Give yourself compassion. Give yourself time to be a person and a parent. But don't slack on what the children need.
Right. You know, as you're speaking, I'm thinking about how when we structure our young child's life in a certain way and provide the opportunity for them to develop really the ego strength from within, then when you have that child going to high school, they're making decisions as opposed to coming to the parents mm-hmm. or the friends for all of the decisions mm-hmm. because they've really developed internally the ability to.
Wow. Beth, you hit a huge hot topic, which is a whole nother presentation of mine, which is, you know, the relinquishing of control. You know, I was teaching in 1988 and it's 2017, and the amount of micromanaging that parents do now. I do a lot of workshops on resilience, perseverance, how to develop that. And again, it goes back to the parent relinquishing control. You know, everything is planned for them now. And that's another thing, you know, their schedule. Schedule is planned to the T. They have all these extracurricular things. There's no time for them to develop self-management when they're literally have six things after school, and then it's homework, dinner, and bed. There's no room for developing, as you said, that ego centered confidence. And the parents are micromanaging everything. And I tell parents, I'm very honest with all my parents because that's my duty to be authentic. And I say that I will tell you when you are crossing over. You know, I say, call me. I'd rather parents call the administrator and behind the scenes worry mm-hmm. and then say to their child, especially for like that second through fourth grade, I always encourage all of them to say, you know, go to the teacher, to be an advocate, to learn to be an advocate for
yes.
yourself. Don't solve the problem. Don't solve it at home.
Right.
And, you know, and then I'd say, here's my number. I give them all my cell phone. I say, call me if you're worried. You know, but let the child go into school and solve it, because the more they can you know, speak for themselves, articulate, advocate for themselves, the more the stronger adults and young men and women they'll be.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, I see that with my daughter really managing the college process on mm-hmm. her own mm-hmm. and then letting me know what the next steps are that I, as a parent, need to participate mm-hmm. in, as opposed to, you know, there are some kids who are sitting there waiting for mom and dad to do it all. And that's mm-hmm. not, you really want a child who knows how to advocate for themselves so that when they get to college,
they can be independent and take mm-hmm. care of themselves and thrive as mm-hmm. opposed to, you know, just floundering.
I speak to a lot of college professors, admissions people, and that has also changed. I mean, they're definitely seeing in the college arena now where parents are I've heard people go in interviews after college with their children. I mean, it is real. The whole idea of parenting has really crossed over to some health unhealthy boundaries, yes. in my opinion. And honestly, it starts when they're two. It starts when they're three. There are things that you can do when they're younger to basically say, well, you need to do this. You need to do that and follow through with those things. And the college scene, I actually asked a college admissions person. It was from Berkeley. I had met her over the summer, and I asked about the orientations. And they have parent orientation now. They actually created that. The colleges created that to get the parents away from the children. So that became – now they're – I just went through – my daughter's a senior at Marist. You know, I was like, I was like, what's all this college prep stuff? I mean, my mom never did that. They just basically dropped right. me off. And now they have – and it's to get the parents to not hover. So the kids can have their own acclimation and orientation. I have the parents standing around. So now colleges have created things just for hovering helicopter / bulldozer parents. So, I get it. I'm a mom. I'm definitely a mama bear. I tell the parents at my school, no one could be more of a mama bear than me. But also you have to be aware. It goes back to my mindfulness. No matter what stage your child's at, you have to pay attention to your own reactions, your own voice. What is it that's driving you to want to do that or say that or right. act in that way? And the more you focus and analyze your own self and give yourself your own feedback and reflection, the healthier your children really aren't going to be, I think.
It was just this weekend I was working with a middle school child and her – We started working together. I pulled her mom out of the waiting room into my office. And one of the topics that came up, and the mom was right on target. You saw that smile creep up on her face. And she said, I created this monster. not saying that her child was
right,
a monster,
right,
of course, but the problem.
Right.
And the issue was they were both sitting and having a meal together, and the daughter looked at her mother. This is, you know, a 14-year-old who certainly can right. get her own glass of water, and said, can you get me a glass of water? I'd like 2 ice cubes, please. And the mother said, are you kidding? What's the matter with you? Go get. And she said, you know what? I cater. I didn't when I should have allowed the child to start to be responsible for themselves. I was busy doing. And, you know, it's lovely to have that luxury of time and to be home and to be doing that. But, you know, I think sometimes when I'm looking at families, I can't help but be a little prejudiced here, but my children had a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
That was not an option. You were right. not in my house going to – you were lucky if I did your laundry.
Right, right.
My kids by ninth grade were certainly, you know, doing their own laundry.
Right. Or as I say, when I grew up, my mother used to make us go outside. Literally, we had to go outside. We couldn't come in. And if we were thirsty at the door, our little paws against the sliding glass, it was like the hose.
Yes.
You have the hose. But, I'm going to be talking a lot tomorrow about specifics in my presentation, things parents can do to help develop independence in young children. Because it's hard to say, what does that look like for a three-year-old? I mean, three-year-olds still can't pull up their own pants. I mean, it's hard for parents to you know, you don't even think it's a default mechanism. It's hard to go from the infancy to the toddler to the preschool stage. And I think sometimes they just hang on to those stages and the way in which they interact with the children just a little too long. And so
right.
that's what I'm hoping to help people with, and that's what I help my families with at Sacred Heart, to give them those tools and techniques to be able to and to do. If you do have time with your children, there are marvelous, incredible, enriching, deep things you can do. You know that you don't have to be busied with the basics,
right?
You know, the children can take over those things for themselves at different various ages. There are better things to be doing with them and conversing with them about.
Yeah. So tell me this. One of the pieces that you'll be discussing tomorrow is how to instill the love of learning in children.
Mm-hmm.
And You know, I've seen that grow and develop in my own, and I don't really know what specifically, how I might have participated in that. I'm sure it came naturally because my dad was an educator, but I couldn't tell you how to do that.
Well, that goes really a lot, plays a lot into what you just spoke about the removal more of the independence. Lately, nowadays, there's a lot of pressure on academic pressure.
Yes.
So very early on, I mean, I have people ask me, you know, what do I need to do to get my kid into MIT and or, you know, the Merit Scholar Awards and things.
You're
and
being asked that at the elementary level?
Not at Sacred Heart, but at my school in San Antonio, I was asked that. It was we were an advanced accelerated school, but I was asked, what am I doing so my child can be a Merit Scholar? And I think there's a lot of I do a workshop with parents comparing taking Kumon, yes. Mm-hmm. class and climbing a tree, and I show them cognitively which actually activates and promotes learning and growth in the brain, and it's definitely climbing a tree. So I think that in regards to what you just said, we are over emphasizing that.
I just want to, climbing a tree develops more
cognitive growth in many different more of a broad spectrum of cognitive development than going to a math Kumon class.
I love that.
We forget that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to use that for sure.
Oh, I'll give
work.
You all my research. I'll give you my presentation.
All right. So tomorrow night at the Rye Public Library, we will have Christine from Sacred Heart Yay. Presenting from 6:30 till 8 p.m. It's open to the public yes. and free to all. Mm-hmm. And it's a workshop for parents on children and mindful parenting from preschool through fourth grade. Thank you so much
Thank
for
you
joining
so much.
Us.
Thank you.
All right. This is Beth O'Malley from the Greenwich Sentinel Radio Hour at Be Well with Beth, 1490 AM or WGCH.com. Thank
this
you.
Is 1490 WGCH Greenwich.
Confirmation Week, Family Help. I'm Chaz Henry. With confirmation hearings set to begin tomorrow, some people nominated for posts in President-elect Trump's cabinet have been meeting with the lawmakers they'll appear before. Senator Chris Coons, a Democrat from Delaware, says he's already had an hour and a half private meeting with Secretary of State nominee Rex Tillerson.
I found Mr. Tillerson to be thoughtful and experienced, although we have different values and different priorities. And I'm going to be asking him some of those same tough questions again on the record in the hearing this Wednesday.
President-elect Trump appears set to make his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, a senior advisor to the president. Correspondent Jessica Schneider.
Kushner has been a top advisor to Donald Trump throughout this election cycle. He played a large role in getting Donald Trump elected, really getting into the nitty-gritty in these states that really meant the difference for Donald Trump.
Though questions could be raised about a law that prohibits officials from appointing relatives to some senior government positions. I'm Chaz Henry. Generally favorable, but mixed. That's the result of a poll asking people what they thought of the Obama presidency. Correspondent Michael Toscano.
57% of Americans questioned say they view President